Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 5th chapter, text 12. Munir vivikshur bhagavad gunanam. Munir vivakshur bhagavad gunanam. Sakapite bhadatam aha krishna. Sakapite bhadatam aha krishna. Yasmin nirnam gramya sukhanuvadar. Yasmin nirnam gramya sukhanuvadar. Matir grihita nuhade kataya. Matir grihita nuhade kataya. Munir vavakshur bhagavad gunanam. Sakapite bhadatam aha krishna. Yasmin nirnam gramya sukhanuvadar. Matir grihita nuhade katayam. Vaishnavis. Muni, the sage. Vivaksu, described. Bhagavat, of the personality of Godhead. Gunanam, transcendental qualities. Saka, friend. Api, also. Te, your. Bharatam, the Mahabharat. Aha, has described. Krishna, Krishna Dvaipayana, Vyas. Yasmin, in which. Nirnam, of the people. Gramya, worldly. Sukha Anuvadai, pleasure derived from mundane topics. Matahi, attention. Grihita nu, just to draw towards. Hare, of the Lord. Katayam, speeches of Bhagavad Gita. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Your friend, the great sage, Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, has already described the transcendental qualities of the Lord in his great work, the Mahabharata. But the whole idea is to draw the attention of the mass of people to Krishna Katha, Bhagavad Gita, through their strong affinity for hearing mundane topics. Purport. So this is still Vidura speaking, I believe. Correct? Yeah. Purport. The great sage, Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, is the author of all Vedic literature, of which his works, Vedanta Sutra, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Mahabharata, are very popular readings. As stated in the Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 4th Chapter, Text 25, Srila Vyasadeva compiled the Mahabharata for the less intelligent class of men, who take more interest in mundane topics than in the philosophy of life. The Vedanta Sutra was compiled for persons already above the mundane topics, who might already have tasted the bitterness of so-called happiness of mundane affairs. The first aphorism of Vedanta Sutra is Atato Brahma Gigyasa, i.e., only when one has finished the business of mundane inquiries in the marketplace of sense gratification, can one make relevant inquiries regarding Brahman, the transcendence. Those persons who are busy with mundane inquiries, which fill the newspapers and other such literatures, are classified as Stri Sudra Dvijabandhus, or women, the laborer class, and unworthy sons of the higher classes, being Brahmana, Kshatriya, and Vaishya. Such less intelligent men cannot understand the purpose of Vedanta Sutra, although they may make a show of studying the Shastras in a perverted way. The real purpose of Vedanta Sutra is explained by the author himself in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and anyone trying to understand Vedanta Sutra without reference to Srimad Bhagavatam is certainly misguided. Such misguided persons who are interested in the mundane affairs of philanthropic and altruistic work under the misconception of the body as the self could better take advantage of the Mahabharata, which was specifically compiled by Srila Vyasadeva for their benefit. The great author has compiled the Mahabharata in such a way that the less intelligent class of men who are more interested in mundane topics may read the Mahabharata with great relish, and in the course of such mundane happiness can also take advantage of Bhagavad Gita, the preliminary study of Srimad Bhagavatam or the Vedanta Sutra. Srila Vyasadeva had no interest in writing a history of mundane activities other than to give less intelligent persons a chance for transcendental realization through Bhagavad Gita. Vidura's reference to the Mahabharata indicates that he had heard of the Mahabharata from Vyasadeva, his real father, while he was away from home and was touring the places of pilgrimage. Omagina Tamaranda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmaya Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So here in the translation it's stated, once again Vidura is speaking, and he's stating that the reason Krishna Dwaipayana Vyas compiled the Mahabharata was to draw the attention of the mass of people to Krishna Katha through their strong affinity for hearing mundane topics. So why would he want to do that? Why would Krishna Dwaipayana Vyas want to do that? What would be his motive? Well, Krishna Dwaipayana Vyas is a incarnation of Krishna. Sometimes he's referred to as the literary incarnation of Krishna. So what he's representing, whatever we can understand, that whatever Krishna wants, whatever Krishna Dwaipayana Vyas' motive is, that's Krishna's motive. And they're on the same page. He's an incarnation. So what is Krishna's motivation? Why does Krishna want to draw the attention of the mass of people to Krishna Katha through their strong affinity for hearing mundane topics? Well, last night I was reading the Isopanishad, and I found what I think is a good answer to that question. This was from, I think, was in the purport to text 12. Prabhupada said, "Since all living beings are his beloved sons, his parts and parcels, God, Krishna, is more sorry than we ourselves to see the sufferings we are constantly undergoing in this material condition." So Krishna's unhappy. That's why. Krishna's unhappy that his parts and parcels, his beloved sons, his parts and parcels are suffering constantly in the material world. He's very unhappy about that. And that's why, and he wants to get us back to the spiritual world. And I found an interesting statement about that. Also, Isopanishad, Prabhupada said, "The Supreme Atma or Paramatma alone maintains all individual minute beings, for the Supreme Lord wants to derive pleasure out of their affection." So this is giving us further insight into Krishna's motive. He's sorry that we're here. He's not happy about the whole thing. Why? Because we're supposed to be in the spiritual world and he wants to derive pleasure out of our affection. It says, "The father extends himself through his children and maintains them in order to derive pleasure. If the children obey the father's will, family affairs will run smoothly with one interest and a pleasing atmosphere. The same situation is transcendentally arranged in the absolute family of Krishna." So that's the original situation. The original situation is that all the parts and parcels are in the spiritual world and they're acting according to the will of the father, the family, and everything goes smoothly. And there's, as it says here, there's a one interest and a pleasing atmosphere, sat, chit, ananda, eternality, knowledge, and bliss. So that's what Krishna wants. Krishna wants that all his parts and parcels, all his beloved sons, be returned to the spiritual world, be in the spiritual world, return to the spiritual world to be in that sort of an environment, that sort of an atmosphere. So what's the problem? And that's why Krishna's Dwaipayana Vyas is writing the Mahabharata, trying to get people, draw them, as it says here, he's trying to draw their attention, back to Krishna Katha. You think that it wouldn't be a difficult job. You think that people here in the material world would be very interested to go back to the spiritual world. I mean, you don't have to look very far to see how messed up and things are here in the material world. But it's not the case. You think people would be desperately trying, desperately like, how do I go back? There's got to be some spiritual life. They're not. They're not even neutral. It's not even like they're, people are kind of like I know there's a lot of suffering here. Maybe, hopefully there's some spiritual answers, No. They're running. People are desperately, it's the opposite. They're running away. What to speak of desperately trying to get spiritual life? They're desperately trying to avoid it, unfortunately. And this is another excerpt from the Sri Asopanishad. Prabhupada said, foolish human beings who are grossly absorbed in the culture of avidya do not mind this cruel process, referring to repeated birth and death in the material world. Here's the line that really got me. Enamored with the beauty of the illusory energy, they undergo the same miseries repeatedly and do not learn any lessons from the laws of nature. So that's what's going on. That's what's going on in the material world in general. People are enamored by the beauty of the illusory energy, and they undergo these same miseries repeatedly. And the kicker is, the really unfortunate thing is, we don't learn. They don't learn any lessons from the laws of nature. So that being the case, Krishna has to, you know, be a little bit proactive, because it doesn't seem like we're able to, of our own volition, we're not able to get it together to try to go back home to Godhead. So Krishna has to take the lead here, and this is one example of that. Krishna is taking the lead in the form of Srila Vyasadeva here. He's producing this literature because he knows people have a strong affinity for hearing mundane topics. So he's kind of, it's like a sugar-coated pill. You know, the medicine is Krishna Katha, but he's got to give it to him. He's got to draw him in first. So he draws him in by, you know, because presenting something, letting him hear the mundane topics. But within those mundane topics, there's the message of Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, and a lot of information about Krishna and his devotees. So they get purified by that process. So this is kind of like, you could say, I mean, it's a trick. Krishna's, you know, he's tricking the living entities. That's not right, is it? Yes, that's right. Krishna will do anything. You know, it's not interfering with the free will. Krishna gives us the free will. He gives the living entities the free will. But at the same time, Krishna's got his free will. You know, so while he's allowing all the rebellious and defiant living entities to try to fulfill their desires here in the material world, he's got his program. And this is one example of that. And this is not a one-off. You know, this is not the only time, this is not the only example that can be given of Krishna doing something tricky, so to speak, to try to get conditioned souls interested in going back home, back to Godhead. Another example would be is Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya, when he was here a little over 500 years ago, it's described that, actually there's a very interesting verse which describes, and it's found in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it describes, the Acharyas say this describes not only Lord Chaitanya, but also Lord Krishna and Lord Ramachandra, but there's one, I'll read it to you. It goes, O Mahapurush, I worship your lotus feet. You gave up the association of the goddess of fortune and all her opulence, which is most difficult to renounce and is hankered after even by great demigods. Being the most faithful follower of the path of religion, you thus left for the forest in obedience to a Brahmin's curse. That certainly, you know, fits Lord Chaitanya, because if you remember, there was that pastime where he was having a kirtan. I think it was probably at the house of Srivast Thakur. And there was this one Brahmin, he really wanted to get in on the kirtan, but they wouldn't let him come in. And he had a bit of a reputation of getting, like, having a short temper and cursing people. But anyway, they wouldn't let him come in. So sure enough, he cursed Lord Chaitanya. He met Lord Chaitanya the next day on the bank of the Ganges. And he said, I cursed you. You know, you, by not letting me into that kirtan, you really caused me a lot of mental anguish. And therefore, I curse you to never be able to enjoy material happiness. And Lord Chaitanya didn't say anything in retaliation or nothing. But it's described that internally he was actually very happy that he got that curse, because, you know, that was his mission. Vairagya, Nija Bhakti Yoga, you know, renunciation and knowledge, that's his mission to live like that. So he was happy about that. And also he wanted to maintain the prestige of the Brahmin community to a certain extent. So he didn't want to counteract it for that purpose, that reason as well. So anyway, so Lord Chaitanya, he took sannyas, sort of, you know, consistent with that Brahmin's curse. And it goes on to say, you left for the forest in obedience to the Brahmin's curse. Out of sheer mercifulness, you chased after the fallen conditioned souls who were always in pursuit of the false enjoyment of illusion. And at the same time, he engaged in searching out his own desired object, Lord Shyamasundara. So that phrase there about how he, out of his sheer mercifulness, he chased after the fallen conditioned souls. So what does he mean by that? What's an example of that? Lord Chaitanya chasing after the fallen conditioned souls. Well, an example of that is Lord Chaitanya is taking sannyas. Lord Chaitanya was in the Grihastha ashram, married to the goddess of fortune there, and he was doing, nicely. He was preaching. He was conducting his Sankirtan movement. But unfortunately, he was being misunderstood by, as described, I'll read a couple passages here. This is the reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, chapter 7. It says, seeing that the Mayavadis and others were fleeing, Lord Chaitanya thought, I wanted to be immersed in this inundation. I wanted everyone to be immersed in this inundation of love of Godhead. But some of them have escaped. Therefore, I shall devise a trick to drown them also. See, so once again, another trick. Srila Vyasadeva wasn't the only one. It goes on to say, the Lord thus accepted the sannyas order of life after full consideration. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu remained in householder life for 24 years, and on the verge of his 25th year, he accepted the sannyas order. After accepting the sannyas order, he attracted the attention of all those who had evaded him, beginning with the logicians. Thus the students, infidels, fruitive workers, and critics all came to surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord. And it's explained, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to deliver all the fallen souls, therefore he devised many methods to liberate them from the clutches of Maya. So, and of course the exact mechanism was that at that time during in India, people still had a lot of respect for the sannyas ashram. So if somebody was a sannyasi, they'd pay obeisances. And Lord Chaitanya knew that. So he took sannyas. So these students, infidels, logicians, whatever, all those people that were mentioned, they would pay obeisances out of formality, to Lord Chaitanya for being a sannyasi. And then Lord Chaitanya took advantage of that opportunity to forgive them for their offenses. So, he was a trick, so to speak. He just to get, allow them to get some agyata sukriti. So, but somebody could say, well, I guess that was the last trick, right? Nope. Srila Prabhupada is another example of that. And Prabhupada mentions it in these purports. He says here, first of all, I'll mention it. Prabhupada saw this as a fundamental principle of spreading Krishna consciousness and as the duty of an acharya. In the purport to the first verse I read, Prabhupada says, an acharya who comes for the service of the Lord cannot be expected to conform to a stereotype, for he must find the ways and means by which Krishna consciousness may be spread. See? It's just, that's text 31 and 32, chapter 7 of the Adi Lila. Yeah. So he can't be stereotyped. This is Prabhupada saying. He must find ways and means by which Krishna consciousness may be spread. He goes on to say in the purport, stereotype methods will never help spread Krishna consciousness. Therefore, what we are doing is perfect by the grace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. For it is he who proposed to invent a way to capture those who strayed from Krishna consciousness. So it's a fundamental principle of both that is observed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself and Purva Acharyas, the predecessor Acharyas. So what exactly was it that Prabhupada, what's he referring to here? What did he do? Well, specifically, let's see, Prabhupada says here, he does mention it. Says, sometimes jealous persons criticize the Krishna consciousness movement because it engages equally both boys and girls in distributing love of Godhead, not knowing that boys and girls in countries like Europe and America mix very freely. These fools and rascals criticize the boys and girls in the Krishna consciousness for intermingling, but these rascals should consider that one cannot suddenly change a community's social customs. However, the boys and girls are being trained to become preachers, and those girls are not ordinary girls, but are as good as their brothers who are preaching Krishna consciousness. Therefore, to engage both boys and girls in fully transcendental activities is a policy intended to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. Jealous fools who criticize the intermingling of boys and girls will simply have to be satisfied with their own foolishness because they cannot think of how to spread the Krishna consciousness movement by adopting ways and means which are favorable for this purpose. So that's a specific thing that Prabhupada did. Prior to the Krishna consciousness movement, there was no such thing as the Brahmacharini ashram, if I'm correct, remembering correctly. Prabhupada invented that. Why? As a ways to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. And he engaged women in preaching side by side with the men. And I think there's another purport where he comments about the results of that. He says, here it is, yeah. He said, the results are wonderful. Both men and women are preaching the gospel of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna with redoubled strength. So what do we learn from this? What's the take-home lessons from these points? Well, one is that we should be humble. This is good, we should be humble. And the logic is like this, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Vyasadeva, as Lord Chaitanya, as the predecessor Acharyas, they have to go to great lengths to try to attract us to Krishna consciousness. So, certainly for people who aren't devotees and some devotees, maybe not all devotees, we should understand that, we're in a fallen position. We're coming from a fallen condition, so much so that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has to, chase after us. As Lord said here, Lord Chaitanya chased after the conditioned soul. So, in other words, we're not like necessarily, didn't start off as great Paramahamsas. We're just very, fallen souls, and Krishna has to go to great lengths, devise tricks to try to engage us in Krishna consciousness. One thing. So that's one point, be humble. The other one was be kind, because that's what Krishna is doing here, and that's what Lord Chaitanya is doing, and that's what the Acharyas are doing. They're doing it out of kindness. They don't have to, Lord Chaitanya didn't have to do that. Lord Krishna doesn't have to do this. Prabhupada didn't have to do what he did. They're doing it out of compassion and kindness. So we're trying to be devotees. We have to try to follow in their footsteps. And we have to try to cultivate that quality of kindness and try to practice being kind to other, people who are trying to become Krishna conscious. People who aren't Krishna conscious, we have to try to voluntarily, take inconvenience ourselves and to try to give them an opportunity to become Krishna conscious. And then if we see people who are trying to become Krishna conscious, same thing. We have to come out of our comfort zone and try to, go the extra mile, so to speak, to try to help people, encourage them in their attempt to become Krishna conscious. And also with people who already are devotees, we have to... you have to see the big picture. Preaching to myself here. You have to train your mind, practice not focusing on the mundane things like, oh, this person's very smart, or this person's not so smart, this person's has a lot of money, this person. Those things are not important. The external qualities are not important. You have to look at how dedicated is this person. How much sincerely are they trying to engage in devotional service? That type of thing. Look at the devotional qualities, and if you want to make an evaluation, which you don't have to do at all, but if you want to evaluate on the basis of that criteria, how much is somebody sincerely trying to engage in devotional service? That's what's important, and just don't focus on the idiosyncrasies or the external stuff. That's also an extension of being kind, you see? So anyway... I think that's all the thoughts I had about this verse. Does anybody have any question? First, we'd like to take questions from new people, if possible. Any of the newer devotees have any question they would like to ask?
All right.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of a question just out of respect. But,
okay, thank you.
Dang, I don't even got a question, to be honest.
Okay.
But I have so many questions about other things, though, for sure, you know.
Okay.
Because you just explained everything so well right now. It was so clear.
So since you don't have a question, but you just reminded me of something, so I'll tell you a little pastime, okay, because most of you haven't heard this. Some of you have, and I apologize if you've heard it already. But I joined in 1973, and middle of April, 1973. So in around December, I guess it was late November, December of 73, Prabhupada was en route from Los Angeles to London. He was flying from Los Angeles to London, and he stopped at the New York Temple. You know, he had a layover. So he came back to the temple and he gave a Bhagavad Gita class. And this is, you know, following on your thing, you didn't really have a question. Okay, so Prabhupada gave the Bhagavad Gita class. I think it was 4:13, like that. And at the end of the class, Prabhupada asked, are there any questions? And there were actually a couple questions, you know. And then Prabhupada asked again, are there any questions? You have to a couple questions. And he was sitting on the Vyasasan. He had the bolster behind him. And he was sitting there very relaxed like this, you know. Are there any more questions like that? And nobody raised a hand. And then he asked a second time, are there any more questions? And nobody raised a hand. And I was, at that time, I was in the temple, say, like 8 months. But I wasn't initiated yet. And there was a lot of devotees who, you know, had been around for like 2, 3, 4, 5 years. So I didn't feel like it was my place even to ask a question. I didn't have a question, and I didn't think it was my place to ask a question. Then Prabhupada asked a third time. He said, very relaxed, are there any more questions? And I started, what was going on in my mind, I was thinking, come on, somebody ask a question. You know, isn't it obvious that Prabhupada wants to keep speaking? Somebody ask a question. I was feeling like uncomfortable for Prabhupada. I felt like they were embarrassing Prabhupada. And it's just my, you know, I'm not saying that was what was going on, but that was what was going on in my mind. I felt, come on, somebody ask a question. And nobody raised their hand. I was looking around, you know, I was feeling increasingly uncomfortable, so I just put my hand up. I didn't really have a question, you know. And Shrutakirti was his servant or secretary or whatever. So they called on me. And I said, yes. So I said, Srila Prabhupada, could you say something about the mercy of Lord Chaitanya? I didn't really have a question. That was off the top of my head, you know. I thought, well, that's a good alley-oop. You know what an alley-oop is in basketball, is an expression? Anyway, I thought that was a good, you know, way to give Prabhupada something good to talk about. And so then Prabhupada, as I said, he was sitting back there really relaxed, and he looks over at Shrutakirti. This is where he comes into the picture, and he goes, it's hard to hear him because I was sitting, you know, at least as far away as I am from Shamarari now. And he goes to Shrutakirti. What did he say? Like, you know, I guess I didn't speak up loudly and clearly enough. So he goes, looks at Shrutakirti. Goes, what? And Shrutakirti comes over to him and leans over to Prabhupada and says something like into his ear, you know. And Prabhupada was like this, you know. And then after Shrutakirti said whatever he said to him, I don't know what he repeated to him, but Prabhupada sat up very straight. He said, it is already said. Padam Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. So continue doing Sankirtan and you'll be victorious. That's it. That's a pastime. And that was it. He didn't ask for any more questions. And I was sitting there and I was going, whoa, what happened? I felt like, I didn't know what happened. Did I just get chastised? Or I was just kind of like totally bewildered. You know, what happened? What just happened? And then a devotee came over to me. His name is Padma Garba. That's his name. And he said, congratulations, Bhakti Jeff. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you just got a personal instruction from Srila Prabhupada. Anyway, that's the pastime. Since you couldn't remember, you didn't have a question. So I didn't have a question, but that's what happened. Yeah. The question, right?
So in regards to the class.
Okay, thank you.
Because Prabhupada also, you know, mentioned so many things. One time, Prabhupada is giving the class, and one person asked a question. It was totally different from what Prabhupada was speaking. He got really angry at him. He says, question should be in regards to the class at that particular time.
This is just a side.
Anyway, Prabhu, so when you were mentioning about the kindness and generosity of Srila Vyasadeva, which is no other than the incarnation, Krishna, Krishna himself. He wants the living entity to come. Okay, a thought came to my mind that in reading the books, we all know what happened when Narada Muni, as a spiritual master, came to him and find him that he was not really satisfied. And then he told him, he says, something that in regards to, yes, because you're writing, you know, books that, in, how do you say, give impetus for the people to, you know what I'm saying? Impetus to go up, do fruitive activities, so it's actually not elevating that much. And then I got a little bit like, wait a minute. I was just seeing one side, the compassionate mood, the uplifting. And we also have that nowadays with devotees who do something just to uplift, and some devotee wants to give the 100 jars, you know, like the whole thing.
So question?
So the question is, can you reconcile that a little bit? That actually he's right, but at the same time, the spiritual master at that moment, Narada Muni, was kind of chastising him. Why are you doing that? You should be glorifying Krishna. Right. But he was elevating, so he's being kind. So,
yeah, well, I think it's a lila, you know, to let Narada Muni come into the picture too, because Srila Vyasadeva's motive was good all along. I mean, you know, Narada Muni pointed out a defect that actually this was actually happening. But he wasn't saying you got the wrong motive. Why? He wasn't accusing of trying to lure people into materialism. He was just pointing out to them that, hey, it's not going to work. What you're doing is it's good, very nice. You got a good intention there, but you got to refine it here. Give him the Bhagavatam. You know, glorify Krishna. Go ahead, go for it. You know. So he told them to meditate in trance and give people Krishna's pastimes. And Vyasadeva did that, and we have the Srimad Bhagavatam. So you know, his motivation, his intention was good all along. Narada Muni came along and said, but actually, let's just fine-tune this a little bit here. Just go ahead and, you know, give him Krishna's glorification straight. That'll work. Don't worry. And he did it, and it worked. That's my understanding. Okay. Yeah. Suvasprabhu. Thank you.
Yeah. In the purport, Prabhupada, he was describing about the purposes of Srila Vyasadeva writing the Mahabharata, especially for the Stri. For that particular class of people, because they are not qualified to understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. So then my question is, okay, if that's the case, and Prabhupada's writing this purport, then why are we distributing Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita to people that are unqualified? They're like sudras, you know, second class persons, not brahmanas, but friends of the brahmanas. So my question to you is, and I know you can answer it, why are we doing this? Why are we distributing Bhagavatam? Why aren't we distributing the Mahabharata?
Uh-huh. Okay, well, off the top of my head, I would say because we got Prabhupada's purports. Prabhupada bridges the gap, you know. Prabhupada was able to preach in such a way that, you know, he could present the straight glorification of Krishna, and in his purports, he you know, explains things in such a way that everybody can come on board, just like the Krishna book. You know, Krishna book is Prabhupada presenting the 10th canto, and even those chapters about the Rasa Lila like that. Prabhupada knows how to do it. So because of Prabhupada's purports, Prabhupada's preaching, people can have access to the message, you know, through the mercy of the pure devotee. The Prabhupada's purports are his mercy. And if people bother to, you know, sit down and read them, you get inspiration, you get understanding. That would be the answer I would give. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think that sounds good. So the other part of that would be,
sure,
if that's the case, and you know what you're saying, which I agree with, by the way, so then really it seems to me like the Bhagavatam is okay, it's scripture and the Bhagavad Gita, but it seems to me then that Srila Prabhupada's purports are the most important thing for us to really study and understand and follow.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I can't, it's too long since I think I remember hearing a statement to that effect, but I couldn't quote it because I could barely remember it, but I think I remember hearing something like that.
Because it appears if you just had a Bhagavad Gita with just a Sanskrit and translation of it, how much could we understand of that?
I wouldn't be able to stand practically nothing. I mean, even if it was Prabhupada's translation. If I had to read Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada's translation, without the purports, I don't know. I don't think I'd be, you know, understanding a lot. It'd be very difficult to really come to the right conclusion, I would think. Yeah. Sachin?
There's one purport in the Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, there is.
Where the Bhagavad Gita, it says that Srila Prabhupada, because this book should not be given to the ignorant kinds of people, the Bhagavad Gita. And then Prabhupada explains, but the devotee of the Lord knows the heart. In other words, it's like a risk. It appears like a contradiction, like Krishna is saying, you know, this Bhagavad Gita should not be given to the ignorant. Everybody's ignorant. Everybody's a sudra. But then Srila Prabhupada, you know, like composed, he says, but the devotee of the Lord, he understands the mood of the Lord, the inner feelings. That's all.
Archie, do you want to say something? Oh, no, I can't. Oh, thank you.
There's a very nice shloka that ends mantras te nishvala mata, that states that unless one hears, receives his mantra from a bona fide or liberated sampradaya vihinaye, that the mantras and the shlokas that that person is reading become ineffective unless one hears it from the proper source. So we can take it further that unless one hears from the liberated soul, namely Srila Prabhupada, the study of Bhagavatam or the study of his mantras are ineffective. But the imports become revealed by hearing from the pure Vaishnava. And for us, we could study the Bhagavatam and chant all of its shlokas and understand all or recite all the stories, but they become just that unless one hears from the or receives it from the liberated soul. Yeah. So Srila Prabhupada's purports are so important that they open up that door to understand what those shlokas and verses mean. That would be my...
Yep. Archita.
Thanks for the nice class. Nakama's point is very important. It's like, would you not invite somebody to Prabhupada's lecture if Prabhupada was lecturing here right now? Would you tell somebody, oh, you're not qualified, don't come? No. When Prabhupada lectured, it was open to everybody. He was lecturing in New York City to people just who walked in off the street, who knew nothing about anything spiritual or Vedic. So reading Prabhupada's books is like going to a Prabhupada lecture. When we take out Prabhupada's books, it was taking out recorded lectures of Prabhupada. So if Prabhupada was sitting here lecturing, you would invite people. Please come. He had big, huge Pandal programs where thousands of people came in off the street to hear him speak. It's the same thing when you take his books out. But at the same time, that story that I keep repeating right here in Los Angeles, when the Bodhi said, you know, when we distribute your books and we tell people about principles, they don't properly slam this cane. You're preaching to cats and dogs. Make them fortunate. Give them the Hare Krishna mantra. Give them prasadam. So that's going on also in Prabhupada's books. He's repeatedly telling you, chant Hare Krishna. Take Krishna prasadam. Because if you do that, then Chaito Darpana Marjanam, and you begin to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Just to add to Archita's wonderful point, in Vrindavan in 75, Srila Prabhupada was giving darshan in the evening in the courtyard in Krishna Balaram. And Prabhupada was going to speak, and he spoke for a number of nights in Hindi. But it was expressly... we were instructed that he wanted all of his disciples, all of his devotees there present. Although none of us could understand the Hindi, but just the sound vibration coming from the pure Vaishnava is so purifying and effective that even you don't understand what it is, just hear it.
Yeah.
Obviously, they were both qualified, more than qualified, to understand the pastimes of the Lord and the philosophy. But it's so important that exchange that it's in the Srimad Bhagavatam in terms of how to associate and to hear from a pure devotee of the Lord. And sometimes I find that we have confusions and we argue about a lot of things. But if we just really just surrender and read Srila Prabhupada's purports and his conversations, it tells you everything that you need to know about Krishna consciousness. And all these things about translation, this translation, to me, is simply a waste of time.
Thank you. Judah Karma, would you like to say anything?
What's that?
I'm asking Judah Karma if he'd like to say anything.
Just since you asked, in response to some of the previous questions and comments, Lord Chaitanya is known for being the most merciful to the fallen. Like he said, Krishna, when he came, he imposed qualifications. You know, if you surrender to me, then I'll give you all protection. And Lord Chaitanya's mood was to not consider the qualification, just to give the mercy.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Kanchaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you.